to talk legal matters. Today we're talking about deceased estates. Peter, very, very good morning. Welcome.
Yeah. Morning, Wayne. Morning to the listeners out there. Lovely day. We've got some nice weather over the weekend, a bit of wind, a bit of a chill when the wind comes up, but it's been good. Today's chat is going to be about deceased estates, maybe to explain a little bit more about deceased estates. In particular, we'll touch on the costs that are involved, because there's always so much mention about the costs and what attorneys charge and what banks charge and things like that. So if we start off, we can mention that the various costs that will come to the fore in the estate are income tax. So, you know, SARS has to be sorted. So don't think if your family has a real income tax, when he dies, it goes away and goes to bed with him. It doesn't. Income tax needs to be sorted out. There is a post-date return that's got to be done and filled in. You've got to report it. You've got to get a clearance from SARS. That's one of the situations that worry a lot of people, because you actually got to fill in the form, submit it to SARS. They'll assess it and confirm what is outstanding in respect of income tax. And also what goes with income tax is that there's also a estate duty that's payable. So at the date of death, all the property deemed to belong to that person forms part of the estate, and then you will get a valuation and estate duty is calculated. It's a tax payable on the dutiable estate of a deceased. But the first $3.5 million is not dutiable.
Okay.
So there's no panic with anything like that. And, you know, estate duty, the normal, their rate is charged at 20% for the first $30 million. So it's quite a substantial amount. And then 25% on anything over $30 million. So your estate duty is 20% for the first $30 million, with an exemption of $3.5 million, and then this anything over that becomes 25%. Accrual claim: if a person is married out of community of property with the accrual system, the accrual is calculated upon the death of the first dying spouse. So the ANC that you entered into. You know, people say, oh, where do I get my share of what we entered into when we got married? Well, it comes into play upon death, and the value of the deceased spouse's estate and the surviving spouse's estate are put together and looked at. The ANC will tell you what each party brought into the marriage, what the accrual is, and, yes, the surviving spouse has a preference claim against the deceased estate for their share of the accrual. This is one of the things where people need to be careful. These days, a lot of people just say, ah, there's no need to get divorced. You know, we're not fighting with each other or anything like that. And then the fight that we have is that death comes and you find that people haven't been living together for 5, 6, 7 years, gone their own ways. And then the family say, oh, no, we're not paying, you know, the other party out. They haven't been together. It doesn't work like that. So be careful. Be very, very careful. Make sure that you look after your estate and that you're able to sort that out, because that can be quite crippling and detrimental to the estate. So the accrual system very definitely comes in. Another thing that a lot of people don't realize is that also where there's maintenance payable, upon death, the maintenance doesn't fall away. You know, if the deceased had maintenance obligations, was in arrear, they don't fall away. They become payable out of the estate, and they are a preference claim as well. And, in fact, future maintenance as well. So if you've got a maintenance order and the kids are young, you know, they're not 18 yet, you've got kids that are 10 and 11 or something like that, you're going to have a claim for that accumulated maintenance for the next 7 or 8 years. You know, a lot of people cover that with an insurance policy or a life policy or something like that. But maintenance is there. So far we have income tax, we have estate duty, we have accrual claims, we have maintenance. Those are all preference claims that will definitely be met and paid out of an estate. So they don't disappear. The next one that we have, an important one, is outstanding debt. So when a person dies, the debt doesn't disappear. You know, it's not a case to celebrate and say, oh, the debt's gone now. The executor must settle all debts, unfortunately. Outstanding balances on home loans, installment sale agreements, medical bills, shop accounts, loans that he's maybe taken from private individuals and the like. So that's all due and payable. And that will come into the LND liquidation and distribution account. It will all be reflected in there. How do I put my claim in? Quite simple. Upon the death, if you know who the executor is, you can write to that person to give them your claim. Alternatively, keep a lookout in the newspaper. It's got to be advertised, the estate. When it's advertised, it will tell you who the executor is. It also lies down at the port, so if you're not sure, you can go down to the port in the district where the person resided, and you can check for that estate, and they'll be able to tell you who the executor is, and you can submit a claim there. And your claim has to be sorted. So, you know, a lot of people also say to me, oh, I don't have a judgment, so I was told I don't have a claim. No such thing. If you have a claim, if you've lent money or you've sold somebody something or whatever the circumstances are, you have a right to claim. Yes, the family can query it. They can dispute it, but it's got to be resolved. So it's not a case of you lose out because of death. Mm. You definitely, very, very definitely still have a claim. So, you know, that's what you've got to do there. Then we come to what I mentioned right in the beginning, where everybody thinks that the person doing the estate is doing you because of the charges that are added and things like that. And people say, at the end of the day, I've got nothing left to distribute because all the costs are taken up and swallowed up the money that there is on hand. Yes, it can happen, and, you know, you need to be cautious. You need to make sure that you cover that in your estate. Don't, you know, end up with debts and things like that that take away everything. The other hidden little costs are the administration costs, such as funeral and burial costs. You know, in most cases, people have a policy. I mustn't say most, but even in certain cases, people have policies which doesn't cover the whole amount. You might have a family member that pays because the family can't afford it, and then they're entitled to a refund of that. And you also may have a situation where the family pay it and they don't claim back the funeral and burial costs. You need to talk to whoever the executor is in that regard, because it does have an effect on the net value of the estate for the tax purposes that we spoke about, income tax and estate duty. So make sure that you do put it in, get it refunded, and then you can distribute it as you like. Advertising costs, like mentioned, you know, there are two sets of notices that must be placed in the local newspaper and the Government Gazette. The first one is the notice of the estate, calling for members of the public to claim if anything is outstanding or to object. And then the second one is once the LND is done, then you get the final notice in the newspaper and the Government Gazette as well. Mm-hmm. So there are advertising costs, and they're not cheap. Unfortunately, with our local newspapers, there are substantial charges that take place. Master's fees. States with a value of more than $250,000 are levied master's fees on a sliding scale. It's up to a maximum of 7,000 rand. So the master's fees have to be paid. Likewise, those are paid to the receiver of revenue. The master will give you an amount that's payable, send it to the executor. That's got to be paid. You've got to have proof of payment of that as well. Bank charges. Every estate gets a bank account that's opened and that operates. So you will have your normal monthly bank account with service fees, charges, payments going out, payments coming in. So you'll find that in the LND. Provision of security. You know, if the executor is not exempt from lodging, the premium payable on the bond of security is a charge against the estate. So it's best that you check your will to make sure that security is not necessary. You know, the masters are very strict regarding security. Maintenance costs, you may well have maintenance costs. You know, the person's got a home. It takes a year or 2 years to wind up the estate. And then you've got maintenance, garden services, repairs, water and lights if there's nobody living in there, painting of the place, all the rest of it. You've got all that is covered by the estate and can be put into the L&D account. Professional fees, not thinking attorneys only, let's not go blame attorneys again for fees.
Yeah.
You know, the need to have professionals assist with the estate. The cost will be paid. When we talk about that, you talk about estate agents, commission, if it's movable property that's sold, a tax practitioner, an accountant, you know, sorting out the income tax, sorting out the finances, sorting out the accrual, and all that type of thing. You may need a valuator and things like that certain properties or the vehicles and assets and that type of thing where you can't give figures and you can't agree as a family. Sadly, families quite often fight over the value of homes, cars, assets, and that type of thing, which is costly if you do that. You know, the best thing is to come together and sort out and say, right, my dad's furniture was worth $100,000 and agree on that. Otherwise, you've got to get a valuator in that's going to come along and charge you maybe $10,000, $15,000 to value the stuff.
And then tell you it's $100,000.
Yeah, they tell you. And you pay on that. I mean, you know, they don't pay on the value of it. They charge you a flat fee. I mean, evaluation costs anything from a minimum of about 7,500 rand. So, you know, if you can, agree on that. And valuation costs, yeah, we've already mentioned it. The estate duty purposes, you need a valuation. The revenue will fall for a value. In certain circumstances, if you submit something and say, my house is worth X, the revenue has the right to come back and say, no. We want a proper valuation in that regard. We don't believe it.
Right.
But you can normally rely on the municipal valuation. If you look at your water and light account, it has a valuation which is accepted in this day and age, which is very nice. It's not like the old days where it was a low value. It's now, you know, a proper value on the home and accepted by everybody. So you've got that now. Then the next one is your bond cancellation cost. Not to forget, if there's a house and you have a bond, you've got to cancel that bond. And the mistake that a lot of people make is that they have a bond, for example, with a bank that comes to an end, and they just leave it. They don't call for their title deed. They don't cancel the bond. The bond still has to be cancelled. It doesn't just fall away at the end of the time. There's still a cost that has to be done for that bond cancellation, and you need to be cautious in that regard. So if you're listening out there and you have a bond that you had in your house and it expired or came to an end 5 years ago, find out where your bond papers are. And it's very necessary, because what I found has been happening a lot lately is that the banks are not able to find the title deeds.
Okay.
And then you've got that cost of paying for an advert. You see it every day. If you look at our local newspaper, if you look at the other newspapers, every single day there's lost bond in there. People don't know where their bonds are. The banks don't know where the bonds are. And there is a cost in that regard. So bond cancellation is very important to do, or to know where your bond is so that it's there. If there's removable property, what goes? You've got the bond, then you also got the transfer costs. You know, the buyer normally pays, but you know, there can be attorney's conveyancing fees that are applicable in respect of your immovable property. So be very, very careful and cautious in that regard. Make sure that you know where your documents are and that type of thing. And also, you know, make sure that the attorney that's doing your estate or whoever it is doing your estate looks after you in that regard. Executor's fees, this is the one that causes most of the pain and where people, you know, go crazy and say, how can the fee be so high in that type of thing?
Right.
There's a hell of a lot of work that's done with it. So it's being set, the fee is 3.5% plus VAT of the gross value of the estate. It's been that for years. It remains that no matter whether it's an attorney, an accountant, an estate specialist or whoever does the estate, it can be one of the sons that's been nominated, they are entitled to claim that executor's fee. And that is fixed at 3.5%. These days, you can negotiate that with an attorney, depending on the amount of work to be done in it. You know, if it's a straightforward, simple estate, the attorney normally can come along and say, you know, this or that is what we're going to do. And then also the executive is entitled to 6% of the income collected on behalf of the deceased estate from the date of death until the winding up. So if, you know, your deceased had outstanding funds due to him, or if he was a businessman and, you know, there were outstanding amounts paid. So, say, for example, the man owned a hardware shop and there were a whole lot of monthly accounts and debts there. The executor can collect that on behalf of the estate, and there is a fee payable there. But you find that most attorneys, when that comes in, they, you know, they include it in the estate. So that is not, it's not compulsory. It depends on the amount of work that has to be done and things like that. So that there is also part and parcel of what needs to be covered. So as you can see, there's a hell of a lot of stuff that comes and charges in an estate. It's not just straightforward. So, you know, if we go back, Wayne, you've got income tax, you've got estate duty, you've got accrual claims, you've got maintenance claims, you've got outstanding debts. Those are the ones that have got to be sorted and take preference. And then, of course, the administration costs. Now that we've mentioned, just to repeat, you've got funeral and burial costs, advertising costs, master's fees, bank charges, provision of security, maintenance costs, professional fees, valuation costs, bond cancellation, transfer costs, and executive fees. So there's a lot of costs that are involved in the estate. And if you just look at what we've just summarized, it shows you that there's a lot of work that's done. So the person earns that 3.5%, whoever he's doing to the estate, because he has the duty to cover each and every one of those different aspects and sort it out. So that's basically where you are with the costs involved in an estate, which was our main chat this morning. And then, you know, the other one is, you know, people say, oh, what do we need when we're going to report an estate? What do we need? Of course, the first thing you need to do is to find out, is there a will somewhere? If there's not a will, you need to query it. If there's no will, it can be a problem. But you really need to make sure that you sort that out. And then once you've reported the estate, the attorney or the person dealing with the estate will call for the following documents, just a repeat over there. You're going to need a death certificate. You're going to need a certified copy of the deceased ID. The funeral parlor will normally stamp it deceased. Marriage certificate and the ANC, as we mentioned earlier. A certified copy of the surviving spouse, if there is one. Should the parties be married, maybe in community of property, there's a share there, or the marriage certificate with the ANC for the accrual. The original will, you can't work on a will that there's a copy of, because the right to cancel your will is quite simple, simply done. So if I have a will and I have my original and I destroy the original, I then no longer have a will. So one will never know whether it was done, whether it was stolen, or what the position is. So always safeguard will. Make sure your spouse or your parents tell you where their will is and safeguard it. Often you find people that are not happy with the distribution in a will, and they get hold of that will and they destroy it, which then means that you die intestate, which is a completely different thing. So please safeguard your will. The best is to leave it with the executor, whoever you have appointed, so that the original is there, but make sure they're clear notes as to where it is. You know, a lot of people get into circumstances where they have a will, but nobody knows where they are. Dad had a broker 20 years ago that did the will and kept the will. You know, Dad never talked about the broker anymore. So be careful, make sure. I always give people back their copy with our complimentary slip on top of it, so that, you know, if somebody dies, you just look us up and you come in and we can help you. It's safe. Nobody can withdraw that will. Nobody can destroy that will. The will can only be taken out of our securities by the actual person themselves, and not by any other people. So that's what you would need, just to report it. And then, of course, you know, once that's happened, you'll get the death certificate from the funeral parlor. You're going to have to do a full inventory. Certain affidavits and that are filled in. There's trusts that need to be sorted if there is a trust involved. You know, the executor's identity document is normally necessary as well. CIPCO documents are necessary. You know, if the estate involves shares and companies and things like that, all those documents are necessary as well. So that's what you're going to have to take into the person doing it, or what you're going to have to gather. The appointment of the executor, the next step that's important. So, you know, we now know what the costs are that we've covered. We now know what documents you need. And then this is where attorneys are battling, or not everybody's battling with the master's office at the moment. Because what should be done within a period of 3 weeks is taking up to a year, 2 years in certain circumstances. You've seen it on Carte Blanche. There are programs daily on it. You know, as of recently, there were only 6.75% of that had been sorted. So, you know, in April 2024, the master's office was spoken to and asked why is there this delay. I mean, we get calls and threats daily from, you know, people that are inheriting. Why can't you finish my dad's estate? Why can't you finish that estate where I'm thinking? And our hands are tied, you know, and it's sad because you get situations where people maybe had a property. So you've got the appointment that has been sent off, and the master has to endorse that before you can accept an offer to purchase and things like that. And people don't want to buy a house and wait a year whilst the master's office is in arrears.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And
so, you know, that's a major problem. Major.
We actually chatted about that quite a while ago, where we discussed the master's office and, you know, what the hiccups and the delays were there.
Yeah, there's just no improvement there. It's actually ridiculous. You've got people that died last year, people that died at the beginning of this year, and the master's office can't get through its work and sort it out. And unfortunately, our master's office, Grahamstown, is one of the worst in that regard. You can't even go in to get anything. You know, people write to you and they say, but there's a tracking number. Where's your tracking number? What's happening? They just simply don't issue it because, you know, you can submit the document that then lies in their offices and is not dealt with immediately. You know, there's always an excuse. Oh, that master is dealing with it and that master's been upset or that master's overworked and can't get to it. She will get to it or he will get to it in due course and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So, yes, there are those major problems at the master's office, and we know that the Law Society and places like that are doing their utmost to resolve it. So don't blame your attorney or your executor or something like that. There are genuinely problems at the master's office.
Right.
And unfortunately, like we mentioned, the executor has to be appointed by the master's office, and it's a hurry up and wait, if you want to call it that, at the moment. The next thing that you will all have to do, we spoke about it in the cost, is gathering and valuing assets. So, you know, movable and immovable, business interests, investments, personal belongings, bank accounts need to be got. So you need to know where they are. So that's all the assets that need to be sorted. And then, of course, you know, once you've got the assets, you get the LND account, which is the liquidation and distribution. That has the assets and the liabilities in it. So, you know, don't forget all those liabilities come first before you distribute to the heirs. So you've got to settle all the debts and the liabilities. And we mentioned there, you know, outstanding bonds, outstanding debts, you know, all that type of thing must be sorted and settled. And then once all of that is done and once the executor has put them all together and got them all, you will then sort the liquidation and distribution account. And once that is complete, normally sent off to the master to approve. Once the master has approved it, then only does it lie for inspection for 21 days at the court that has jurisdiction and that it's advertised in the newspaper. Once that has taken place, after that 21 days, you can then pay the creditors, pay the taxes, sort out everything, and after that only distribute the estate. So you've got to make sure that there are no hidden claims or claims that were overlooked or something like that. So you've got to make sure that the LND appears and then only can amounts be paid out. Often a question asked, can I get an advance on my inheritance? Yes, you can get an advance, but it's not going to be a big portion. You might get small loans, for example, if there are kids where there's maintenance due and the mother desperately needs the money, you know, the executor can assist in circumstances like that because those are guaranteed claims. Mm-hmm. And you will know more or less what the value of the estate is and that type of thing. So once all the adverts have taken place and everything, it then comes to distributing the estate. You can then pay out. You then need to give proof of payment to the master. He'll ask for the banking account. He'll ask for proof of all the payments made. He'll ask for acknowledgement from the different parties that have inherited, that they have received their share and that type of thing. And once all of that is done and everything is completed, then the master will give his final approval to say that the estate is now wound up correctly and closed. A lot of people also ask the question, can I ascertain as to whether or not an estate has been wound up? Yes, if you have an identity number or an estate number, there is a way of checking online. Uh-huh. The master's office does have it, is supposed to have it. That's a tracking number. So one can check as to the status of the estate. But at the present moment, you have so many estates where there's just no tracking numbers or where the master just doesn't post anything. So it's a joke again.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, the executor is blamed. The other thing that the master as well, if you've been appointed as the executor and you're one of the children of the master, he's going to query whether or not you're capable of doing that. He may well refer you to an executive who is a professional, experienced, and has the operational ability to assist you with the estate. So, you know, it's very important these days that they wound up correctly. It's complicated, and the master invariably asks for assistance in that regard. When that happens, you can do a deal with the executor by, you know, well, he's not going to be the executor, you the executor. Let's talk about the assistant, the professional assistant, let's call it that. You can do a deal with him to say, I'm not going to pay you 3.5, I'm going to pay you 1%, or you can charge him for what you do. There are a whole lot of different ways of doing that.
Right.
So
right.
That's the winding up process. It's not a straightforward, simple thing.
It's complicated.
It's complicated, and it's got to be managed if you think about it properly, effectively, and you've got to make sure everything's sorted at the end of the day.
Right, right. And it's vitally important that you follow those steps. Otherwise, there will be even more delays than the delays caused by the master of the court.
Yeah.
Peter, we're going to have to wrap it there. We've hit 8 o'clock and we're moving on. But just very, very quickly, if somebody wants to reach you, how do they get in touch with Adams?
If they can like us on Facebook and they'll see all the chats themselves and other chats that we have there, other stuff that, well, I mustn't call it stuff, other nice little
topics,
reports that we put on from time, topics, if you want to call it that. On Facebook, ALLAMS, in other words, add an S onto our surname. Wild Coast always has our chats as well, after the chat today. Mm-hmm. We're situated at 6 Sansom Road in Berea. Telephone 043-721-0118. I repeat that, 043-721-0118. 6 Sansom Road, down the side street where Pep Stores
is. Peter, thank you very, very much. Have a great week. Looking forward to chatting next week.
Yes, always great to chat on the show. Enjoy the rest of the week as well, Wayne.
Thanks, Peter. Take care. Cheerio then. Peter Allam with today's Legal Eagle Chats, and it will be on our website.